Welcome to the Sense Making in a Changing World podcast, where we explore the kind of thinking we need to navigate a positive way forward. I'm your host, Maura Gamble, permaculture educator and global ambassador, filmmaker, eco-villager, food forester, mother, practivist, and all-round lover of thinking, communicating, and acting regeneratively. For a long time, it's been clear to me that to shift trajectory to a thriving one planet way of life, we first need to shift our thinking. The way we perceive ourselves in relation to nature, self, and community is the core. So this is true now more than ever, and even the way change is changing is changing. Unprecedented changes are happening all around us at a rapid pace. So how do we make sense of this? To know which way to turn, to know what action to focus on, so our efforts are worthwhile and nourishing and are working towards resilience, regeneration, and reconnection. What better way to make sense than to join together with others in open, generative conversation? In this podcast, I'll share conversations with my friends and colleagues, people who inspire and challenge me in their ways of thinking, connecting, and acting. These wonderful people are thinkers, doers, activists, scholars, writers, leaders, farmers, educators, people whose work informs permaculture and spark the imagination of what a post-COVID, climate-resilient, socially just future could look like. Their ideas and projects help us to make sense in this changing world, to compost and digest the ideas, and to nurture the fertile ground for new ideas, connections, and actions. Together, we'll open up conversations in the world of permaculture design, regenerative thinking, community action, earth repair, eco-literacy, and much more. I can't wait to share these conversations with you. Over the last three decades of personally making sense of the multiple crises we face, I always return to the practical and positive world of permaculture, with its ethics of earth care, people care, and fair share. I've seen firsthand how adaptable and responsive it can be in all contexts, from urban to rural, from refugee camps to suburbs. It helps people make sense of what's happening around them and to learn accessible design tools to shape their habitat positively and to contribute to cultural and ecological regeneration. This is why I've created the Permaculture Educators Program, to help thousands of people to become permaculture teachers everywhere through an interactive online dual certificate of permaculture design and teaching. We sponsor global perma-youth programs, women's self-help groups in the global south, and teens in refugee camps. So anyway, this podcast is sponsored by the Permaculture Education Institute and our Permaculture Educators Program. If you'd like to find more about permaculture, I've created a four-part permaculture video series to explain what permaculture is and also how you can make it your livelihood as well as your way of life. We'd love to invite you to join our wonderfully inspiring, friendly and supportive global learning community. So I welcome you to share each of these conversations, and I'd also like to suggest you create a local conversation circle to explore the ideas shared in each show and discuss together how this makes sense in your local community and environment. I'd like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land on which I meet and speak with you today, the Gubbi Gubbi people, and pay my respects to their elders past, present, and emerging. I'm delighted to share with you this episode. I have with me two guests from the innovative AgroPerma Lab in Poland. Joanna Boczewski, I'm sorry, Joanna, that's probably not right, and Claudia Krinska. They are bringing together permaculture, agroecology, food sovereignty, education, arts, and activism. The AgroPerma Lab Foundation is a grassroots organization, and I first came across them when they organized the International Forum of Permaculture Educators this year. And this was co-hosted with the Biennale Warsaw. And I'm so delighted to chat with them today to learn more about what's going on with permaculture in Poland and also the bigger picture of what's happening around that. And also to be inspired by the direction in which they're taking their permaculture education and their thinking. One of their new projects, which is really fascinating and which we talk about later on in this conversation, is their new project, the Supermarket Museum, Living Together Within Limits. I just so love this chat, and I really feel like I made some new friends in this show. And I know that we're going to keep up this conversation. So I hope you enjoy this conversation just as much as I did. It's my delight to welcome to the show today Claudia and Joanna from Agro Permalab. Now, I came across their work when I was, as you do, searching around the internet for really fascinating and interesting things that are happening in the world. And I came across their International Forum of Permaculture Educators. And, you know, running the Permaculture Education Institute, this immediately piqued my interest. And then I started exploring what they've got going on. And so I thought, I need to talk to these wonderful women, because they've got so many amazing perspectives on how to share permaculture in the world, which is really innovative. And I think this is a, you know, often when we think about permaculture, it's just about, you know, what's going on in the garden. But, you know, there's that and there's so much more. And that's why I was really excited to see the work that you're doing, and really excited to talk more. So welcome to the show. So I thought maybe a good spot to start would be, like, what's actually happening in your part of the world in terms of permaculture? So you're in Poland, and what's permaculture like in Poland? What's a Polish permaculture?
So maybe I'll start, because I'm a Warsaw-based gardener. So in Poland, we have two paths, like rural and urban. And I think that the past 18 months, I can observe that more and more people in the city are interested in permaculture. So I think that the pandemic, or at least its beginning, changed our approach to the food itself, and permaculture stepped in when people were looking for the ways of growing food on their own in the small home scale. So that's I think that's the most interesting thing now in Poland, that more and more people are involved in this urban permaculture, and they're trying to practice it in their allotment gardens or even in their balconies and terraces. So it's very, very interesting and impressive, and at the same time, we have also groups of people who have their own land in the countryside, and they decide to join the permaculture movement. So we also do have, like, this eco villages and people who have, I would call them cooperatives, like food cooperatives. And they work together in using the tools of permaculture. So these two paths, urban and rural in Poland. Yes.
Wonderful. Did you want to add anything to that, Joanna? Because there's lots of questions that I'd like to dive in to follow up on that. But before I do, get your perspective on where things are at.
I think Claudia, I gave a really good sense of how the most recent 2 years have impacted the zeal for returning to the land, coming back to basics, taking care of your own food, growing. But actually, in a bigger context, Poland has quite a special place in Europe, because we are centrally located as a country, geopolitically, historically. And so the gap of the generation that has known how to grow food, was connected deeply to the peasant culture of the countryside. You know, the allotment culture has not faded away yet. So this gap is much smaller to bridge, unlike in some other Western countries, where there might be perhaps two or three generations of people who have specialized in other areas of work. So that's one thing. And perhaps another thing to say, that this permaculture movement in Poland, or this you know, this natural growing of a network of practitioners, is maybe around 15 years old, going back to some of the real pioneers in Poland, who are just doing their own thing somewhere on the map. Right now we have the permaculture map of Poland with dotted with different farms, educational centers, we have the first PDC inspired online course that is just being completed. We have a small publisher who's translating books. We have first trainings in cities, etc. However, it's worth saying that we've only had in those few decades only one PDC training as far as common word goes. So there are probably some teachers who are getting ready to collaborate and offer that kind of longer training. And our organization is partly interested in supporting all kinds of little and bigger movements to make permaculture available in all domains of life, but also to make permaculture education, which is a much more experiential, practical, transpiring through different areas of life as well, different domains, different sectors. Yeah,
fantastic. Oh, that's so exciting. Publishers and online courses and all sorts. Before I get into that, I just wanted to touch base with what you mentioned, Claudia, about allotments and eco-villages. So I just wanted to ask you a couple of questions about that. So with the allotments, are they quite large allotments with like little houses on them? Is it that style, or is it more like little pocket ones? Like in Australia, an allotment for us would be something that's not much larger than the bench that I'm sitting at, you know. So for you, an allotment is something quite different. And so the question with that is how do people, like, do many people access allotments? Is there a preponderance of allotments, or people like really struggling to get their hands on one now? They're so popular. What's the allotment world, and how much permaculture is going on in allotments?
Mm-hmm. I think that there's something in the middle, something between bench and a huge pile of land. Something, I think, in the middle. And its origin is in People's Republic of Poland. So they were popular back then. In the 90s, after the transformation, people started, they resigned to grow food there and started to plant only flowers and decorative trees. And now, during the pandemic of COVID-19, many people wanted to have such allotment garden to plant food there, to grow their own food. So now allotments are becoming more and more popular. And as Joanna said, there are two generations there. So elderly people who remember the times of communism and the times where food producing or home food growing was very popular. Mm-hmm. And on the other side, we have young people who can gain knowledge from their grandparents who are still alive, and they are focused on growing their own food. So they also want to relax on their allotment, but their main goal, their main aim, is to produce food there. And while they are producing food, they're constantly seeking for natural tools, natural methods of doing this, because they don't want to. They're very aware of climate change. They're very aware of important issues as water shortage, for example. So I think in these fields, they're really more aware that their parents were. While they're trying to tackle these problems, like I've mentioned, for example, water shortage, they are looking for natural methods, and they find permaculture. So permaculture is one of the tools for them. And in Warsaw, we have quite a huge increase of an interest in allotment gardens. They can cost up to, 20,000 or even more, or wow, even 50,000 now. So yeah, these are huge prices. And this is one of the cons of
Do people own these, or are they renting them, or
renting them? Okay. Yes, but to rent, you have to have this amount of money.
Okay.
Yeah.
So with the people who are moving out of the city, you mentioned that, and you talked about the eco-village idea and these cooperatives. Is that moving into villages that might not have been, and that might have been abandoned? Is that something that's in your country, or is it more just going out to the land where there's vacant land and starting up something new?
I'm not sure if in Poland we do not have abandoned villages. Still, we have many people living in countryside and growing food. Of course, there is a mega trend that this urbanization trend, that people are moving to the cities, and this shift is really visible nowadays. But still, we do have farmers, peasants, and this knowledge is passed on from one generation to another. So we do not have abandoned villages, but more like vacant lands, as you said. So yeah, people, especially from the cities, which are interested in permaculture and which are very environmentally aware, they are looking for such lands in the countryside, and they're moving there with their friends, with the group of friends, not on their own. That is very common nowadays.
So Joanna, you mentioned the connection with the peasant history of your country, and I'm wondering whether permaculture, people coming to permaculture are seeing it as a kind of form of neo-peasantry, or is there a relationship with that, or is it like, is there a particular Polish way of being in permaculture, do you think? Is it different, or I wonder?
It's a great question, actually, and part of what inspired me to address this blending of different cultures and different ways of speaking about nature or about innovation in land use or food growing is that there are multiple cultures. And for sure now, as this trend of picking up permaculture and just setting your raised beds and growing food, you know, within a few months has shot off, permaculture can mean quite little. It can also mean quite a lot when you go into the design and the philosophy and the even spiritual aspects of it. But in terms of integrating the peasant roots, I think it's present. I think there is a simultaneous recovery and reappreciation of like our indigenous ways of processing food, creating landscape. You must contextualize, perhaps to feel it a little bit more, that Poland and Italy and Romania all together have 50% of small farms in Europe. So it means that we have so many small dotted parcels of land that have been generationally handed over and are marked by the regional tradition and by its bioregion, by the territorial resources, etc. So there's the peasant culture with all its technology that was very economical, very resourceful, very unwasteful. It is there bubbling, but of course it's been replaced. It has been stigmatized by communism. It has been in the second wave stigmatized by new capitalist aspiration. And yet the way we're trying to bring ourselves back into connection is by, on the one hand, bringing the what is fashionable in a way, which is permaculture. There's a wealth of resources. There's a wealth of experience from other countries in the world and from the international community. That's why we did also the forum. And on the other hand, we're trying to speak the language of agroecology, because our society is structurally rural and peasant. So it transpires through all layers of our being, culturally, in terms of ethics. In so many Polish households, like, it will be like almost sinful to waste food, you know, like literally. Even if people live in apartment buildings, they will have their little preserve stock for the winter. And nowadays it became much more fashionable. During the pandemic, people started baking bread again, which just isn't so far off. So all these things, I think, are available. And this integration with permaculture of peasant culture is still not yet clearly visible. We are more able to relate the peasant culture to agroecological framework. The agroecology movement from food sovereignty movement in the world that, you know, stresses community aspect of knowledge making, knowledge sharing, of land use, of food being central part of relationships and not a commodity and not just a raw material for production. So really, whether you're a big farmer or a small farmer, the point is that we are serving a social function, actually, the food growing and land care is social. So yeah, just to finish, there's a stigma. There's a lot of old rejection of peasant culture as something archaic. But I think there's space for rekindling the gifts of that indigenous ways of knowing environment. Actually, yeah.
I was going to ask you. Thank you. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Claudia.
Just add one thing to what Joanna said. I think we're in an interesting moment right now, as we are trying to get our roots back and get ourselves rid of this of shame that is connected with living or being from the countryside. Because in 90s, and it is linked with capitalism, I think it was a shame to have such roots, and now we are in this process of transition of getting back to the admiration of maybe not admiration but accepting that this is our history and this is us. So there's nothing to be ashamed of.
No, and this is, you know, what a gift, actually, to be not so far away from it. You know, you don't have to dig too far or scratch the surface too far to be able to find it and to know that there's people around in your living community that have this deep knowledge, which is just amazing. So I wanted to just touch on what something you said, Joanna, about agroecology and permaculture. And maybe you could just define or describe your distinction between the two, and how I kind of got a sense that you feel that the peasant community might be more open to the agroecological approaches as opposed to permaculture. And I just wanted you to kind of open that one up a bit more, like, what is the difference you see and what do you think might be some of the barriers to permaculture or how it's perceived possibly? Just if you could kind of play with that a bit.
Yeah, we can play both with Claudia. You can compliment me. Yes. This will be just one perspective, of course, but it's a great question. Like, what barriers or opportunities both terms and ideas about those cultures present? I mean, first of all, I think that I will take a little broader look, which I think is that when we use one or the other framework for describing what we do with the land, how we manage this, how we organize ourselves, I mean, they can be a little exclusive in themselves. So once you settle into a framework, then you identify with this and you, especially if there's an economic aspect to what you do, then it becomes meaningful to be coherent within it. But actually people will speak very different languages about what they're doing. And now, just to mention some key defining features from how we see from the Polish space, permaculture or agroecology. I mean, there's also regenerative farming, there's organic farming, right? And agroecology will say, well, agroecology is anything from the traditional in the indigenous way to regenerative farming, organic, certified and non-certified, peasant, pastoralism, fisheries. I mean, anything within agroecology, because these are systems that intelligently mimic positive ecological patterns whilst applying them to a managed land care, let's say, right? For food production specifically, but not only. And for biodiversity, for soil restoration. Permaculture will say something similar, where we are the design foundation based on three principles of ethics that is aimed at recreating regenerative, abundant, spaces where humans and other beings and components of environment can coexist abundantly in well-being and amplify each other's goodness, in very basic ways, right? Permaculture community has been very, very grassroots. And I think it stays more or less balanced from what I can observe from Polish perspective, worldwide, let's say, between this very kind of anarchic spirit, local innovation, authentic thing in my own compound or in my own community, to like the commercial path of it that has created new job descriptions from a designer to consultant to teacher to what else can you have, like a podcaster, right? You could you could really base your work on spreading that philosophy in practice. Agroecology, but in my view, permaculture, except for a few cases, for example, in Portugal, where the Tamara community has been used as an example in state policy, has not entered very much the public policy domain, whereas agroecology, with its very specific accent on popular and political education and the empowerment of citizens to shape their own environments and create good mechanisms for self-governance as the basis, based on solidarity, based on mutual aid, based on respect for food producers, fundamental respect for food producers who are feeding us. And the fact that agroecology has been simultaneously defined by FAO, Food and Agriculture Organization of United Nations, and by a mass movement of peasants, by La Via Campesina movement, it's the largest social movement in the world, gathering organizations from I don't know if it's not 130 countries or something. I mean, this is grassroots peasant organizations with, maybe Indonesian organization counting as many as few hundred thousand people, right? It's a very big movement. Then, therefore, there is an accent on system change much more, and there's many more mechanisms developed to really stand and fight for our rights. It's a human rights-based system. Recently, about 2 years ago, this movement, food sovereignty movement, agriculture movement, they are interrelated. They oppose, basically, they oppose a trade-based World Trade Organization defined food system where food is just import export commodity, or our food needs are defined based just on calorie intake, so you can feed me whatever you want as long as I get the 1500 calories. This is not what we want. So yeah, this is, they are principally not different. They have so many different interlinking core principles from the ecological, biological mimicry through interlacing many functions, closing cycles, empowering community, looking at the community as an ecosystem. But agroecology has much more of an accent on political system change. And permaculture has it, but it's a little more on a community level, I would say. And maybe Claudia, you wanted to add something that Rosemary
I think I'm on the same page as Joanna, I would totally agree that permaculture has great tools, but agroecology is more about an impact on polity, on policy makers, and is a huge movement that can empower peasants and indigenous people. So I think that's the main difference, but permaculture also goes beyond the idea of single farm. It should be a huge movement that calls for cooperation, because for me that's the most important in permaculture. These connections and between the particular elements of the system. I can speak from my own experience that a few years ago I had, let's call it, a quarter life crisis, and 6 years ago.
I think I had one of those too.
So you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And then I found myself in a community garden at the local culture center, run by my friend, and it was a place of total freedom for us, a place of gardening experiments, and we invited many permaculture practitioners and learn new techniques and practices in our daily work on an ongoing basis. So we built raised beds, compost heap, and started to mulch, started to work with the soil as to nourish it, not to dig it. So at first glance, permaculture for me, these were just techniques, methods that I can use to grow food naturally. But and we did not call it permaculture then. We did some things really intuitively. But when I started digging deeper, and when we browsed through websites and books, what I found really appealing, it was the approach that permaculture cares for the people as much as it cares for the environment, for the earth. So I think in these terms, we can say that permaculture also is a huge movement that can have an impact on politics, on policymakers. But I would agree with Joanna that in Poland, agroecology can be more suitable for country areas. Yes.
Yeah, for talking at a different level. I guess there's different languages that you use in different ways, and that, like, I feel like you're saying, there's a lot of steeping between these different concepts. And, you know, in some ways they're inseparable, but around the edges there's something that is different, I guess, in how they're described or how they're perceived, and how, like you're saying, there's this great big movement behind the agroecology that has recognition at UN level and the government level and so on. And so I wonder, you know, what is the policy? I mean, sorry, this is a little bit off track, but does your government have an agricultural policy that supports regenerative, sustainable, agroecological types of growing? Sorry, I should ask a particular one of you.
It's a tough question, I think.
Yeah. Yeah,
like baby, only baby steps.
Yeah,
it's a great question. I mean, there's a maybe it's really hard to know where to begin. Oh, does it have, is there an attention to, let's say, organic regenerative farming? There's some, yes, but the political agricultural scene is very much dominated by a kind of mechanization lobby and industrial farming lobby. So it's for sure, it's kind of small scale matters agenda, or small farm can feed us, is largely neglected. Mm-hmm. But the government actually, countrywide, we do have a center of agricultural advisory, centers actually in almost every parish or, every small region. And they do have an organic farming program. There are organic demonstration farms and educational farms, and they are very well supported. I mean, I think there are like maybe 500 or 600 members by now. So dotted across Poland, that makes it quite accessible with, let's say, 20 to 30 farms for principally for education of young people, schools and adults in one province. And the interest is there. It's like, but within institutions, there are battles for narratives, right? So, for example, the Center for Agricultural Advisory has offered us to write educational scripts for teaching permaculture on farms and seed education scripts and agrobiodiversity. But yet when we wanted to put into one article the fact that, 70% of food worldwide is still produced by small producers, they didn't want to put it there. I've produced a long list of worldwide reports by UN departments and independent researchers, and they didn't want to take it because they are locked on above, right? Mm. But again, and as a second example, that the allotment association, this is a very old structure, one of the oldest associations in Poland. Maybe it has more than half a century old, maybe 60 years, I'm not sure now, but they have picked up permaculture. They are creating their own, now there's more articles in their monthly magazine, which you get in paper as an allotment keeper. So that's, it's how many? I think it's around 500,000 little allotments or more in Poland. It's quite a big number.
That's amazing. Poland. Yeah.
And they create their own podcast, and they saw that the permaculture is a new way of speaking about managing this small space. So yes, the institutions can bend, but wide system to write something into law, like let there be a city budget for creating annually 5 new large community gardening spaces or something. I mean, this kind of people's food policy, as it was made in the UK, for example, it's the civil society sector is filling the gap for now. Yeah.
And I wonder whether the food forest concept too is coming in, or the community food forest model is emerging there too, or is it mostly just vegetables and herbs and annuals and things?
Yeah, I would say mostly vegetables and herbs, not fruit forests. Fruit forests are not very typical for Polish countries, I would say.
Yeah.
Or maybe, Joanna, you have other experience.
I think you're right. I mean, people would have a variety of, a perennial fruiting or even vegetable plants in the gardens traditionally. And the allotments, they have all the variety, nice trees and bushes, etc. But it's not as the forest garden principle is already elaborated elsewhere. I think now we are having the first book translated in Poland about forest gardening by Tomasz Remiasz.
Great. So,
this is going to be the beginning of probably offering some trainings and really bringing them knowledge. This is not, because actually we're talking about connecting plants and then subsequent kind of design of management in time that is different from annual management, right? I cannot say I have big experience with the forest garden.
Oh, well, that's really interesting that there's new publishing that's happening and that Thomas's book is coming. That's great. Yeah. really exciting. So I wanted to ask you more about the work that you do in your organization. So maybe if you could tell us a little bit about what it is and when you started it and what some of the projects. I know you've got a couple of really interesting projects that are on the boil at the moment. Do you want to just speak to some of those and maybe tag team between each other to respond?
Okay, maybe I'll start with the roots and Claudia can go with the shoots. Because the AgroPerma Lab has emerged as a training branch of the Food Sovereignty Network of Communities Organizations. So we saw that whilst we are bringing some new concepts and knowledge and practices, we also need to strengthen the organizational capacities of community leaders. And so our organization's main mission is really to empower education for the development of permaculture, agriculture, and food sovereignty, but also to strengthen this intersectorial sense of collaboration. And we do it in a few. Initially, we assumed we'll do it in several ways. One is through creating like residential trainings that are based on dialogue, a lot about meeting different ways of knowing, meeting people from different sectors, and taking a topic like agroecology in a global and Polish perspective, and engaging agroecology and women's rights, or agroecology and economics, or so. This is how it started. And the special thing about it is that when we meet, we bring trainers who meet us as equals in that dialogue. So they bring a little bit of expert or special, maybe not expert, but specialized perspective based on their long experience of working with a topic. For example, in seed, we had Ben Gable from Heritage Seed Catalog from UK. We had Maria Cascarosa from the Spanish Community Seed Bank Network. We had Catherine from Heritage Seed Library, from Garden Organics from UK, and also our Polish speakers who are activists or educators or, you know, special knowers of some area. We also have this idea of working as a lab and, you know, going a little bit to the edge and meeting in the area where no one is quite yet sure what is becoming, or what is it going to mean, and how to translate it into the system perspective, into personal perspective, into community perspective. We work with synergies. So, for example, we try to bring agriculture and permaculture together and like, okay, how do they brush against each other? How do they like each other? How do they complement each other? So this is based on conversation. But an important thing, for example, has been that our trainings, except for this year, COVID, when the seed training was online, we place it on farmers. So part of the training is not just all the time exchange or lectures, or actually just no lectures, but that like a kind of dialogue. It gets quite intense when people fully listen to each other and reveal each other with concerns and outlooks, but also practical farm work, so that when we come out of the classroom, we can let go, we can have informal conversation. So this is part of it, with publications, you know, also some little films, and maybe I head over to
apart from the seed training that Joanna already mentioned, we also organized this international educators forum, permaculture educators. And this is the event that you've mentioned at the beginning. And it was the first event of its kind, I think, in Poland, because due to COVID, we had to conduct it online. But thanks to that, we also managed to provide an opportunity to share the knowledge and to meet with people who are already pioneers or active leaders in permaculture field around the world, and they wouldn't be able to come to Warsaw. So it was a great opportunity to meet them online, at least. And it was a real eye opener for me, because during this forum, I had an opportunity to join the lecture of Rosemary Morrow, and I think I said a few words about it previously, because she said that permaculture needs redefinition in today's societies, because we are used to permaculture as a method that can be implied in on farms, in eco-villages, but Rosemary has a huge expertise and experience in working with refugees in refugee camps, and she thinks that nowadays we have to find solutions that can be used in crowded places, on small plots of land, such as refugee camps, and permaculture has to be translated to illiterate people, for people who cannot read. So we have to think about permaculture as something without books, without manuals, but with a large amount, for example, of audiovisual materials or podcasts such as yours, which will enable these people to learn. So new permaculture for more crowded, maybe urban areas, for new groups of people is needed. So that was very eye-opening for me during this forum, and I think that much more ideas such as Rosemary's appeared on this forum, and it was very, very interesting. Now we are and our ongoing project, which we're counting days to the premiere, is a supermarket museum project. Is a web doc, a digital exhibition. I would say that that aims at answering the questions: how can we live in modern societies as they are, within given limits of the planet, of the earth, of the environment, of the climate, it explores and interprets this supermarket culture, which is linked with industrial agriculture, monoculture. So it tackles the problem of lack of social solidarity, economical solidarity, and it tries to answer the question: how can we change that? And it also presents the alternatives.
As an exhibition, is that like including art pieces? Is it multimedia?
Yes.
What does it look like? I mean, this is fantastic because it shifts the way that we're thinking about and communicating permaculture using like different forms of culture. So yeah, how what is it gonna, is there a preview what do you expect, what can people expect to see when they enter into this?
Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you for appreciating the possibilities for new ways of communication. For me, when we were thinking about this project over a year ago, it was becoming very obvious that we are getting a little bit worn out of using all the time the same way of talking, and that we need to subvert something and maybe collaborate with the artists who really reveal mystic truths. They can communicate without words, right into the depth of you, without you being able to know exactly what is going on. You have to discover yourself again. So the web doc as an online exhibition will be a possibility to enter a map or actually like a supermarket space where you can hover around different alleys and shelves. And it's all made with simple drawing line, but there will be pop-up windows that lead you into artists' artifacts. So real artists from Europe who have, actually from all around the world, I think there are 11 nationalities from three different continents. It was quite a small collective of artists, but those artists have not been previously much exposed to the topic of economical or environmental justice in relationship to supermarket culture or the food growing innovations growing from the grassroots up. So you get like some interesting interpretations and quite thought-provoking. For example, supermarket VR. It's a story of going through a supermarket as if with the VR set on your eyes and picking produce and getting the full scan in a few seconds of where this egg came from, how many chicken factories, this, that. So you get the upload and you get success.
Wow. And it's fantastic. I love it.
So with Václav Klaus, where he, this is in our trailer, maybe we send you the link as well, where the Czech artists have found this record of the ex-president and ex-prime minister.
No, he was the former, prime minister of Czech Republic.
Where he describes his first experience of going into the supermarket after the economic transformation into capitalism. And he says, and you go, oh, and there are these lanes, long, and you go and looking for something, and I couldn't find a yogurt. And when you see this, like, quite hilarious. And then we have the garden part. So what we want to do is level the critique and bring to awareness what no one wants to know about, which we all know about, the environmental and social cost of our convenience culture. But on the other hand, we want to show, hey, there's like actually a lot of interesting stuff going on. There's community gardens, community-supported agriculture, co-ops, and we present a garden map with some innovative philosophical take on food growing with migrants, food growing in schools, food growing as the way to develop ecosystemic ethics and intelligence, and just like a educational space, but I hope also transformative space when you
sounds magnificent. Is it going to be an English version or there is. So whenever you can share a link to that, I would love to share that out. It sounds absolutely brilliant and really diving into kind of like the whole politics of our food system and seeing that backstory of our food and giving more of a platform for why and how we can be moving forward. So that's absolutely brilliant. What is your hope for permaculture in Poland and where you would like to see it take you then? Maybe you could start, Claudia, and then you could say goodbye. You got to go and zip off.
I would love to hear what Joanna will say. What are her dreams? But Joanna uses this term often, part-time gardener, and I think this is one of my biggest dreams, that in like 10 years from now, everyone will be a part-time gardener, and everyone will be somehow involved in permaculture. So it can be as we said previously, you can be a designer, a podcaster, a teacher, a gardener, a farmer. There's a whole range of activities that you can involve in. So this is my dream, and Another one is that policymakers will listen to people who are from the permaculture society and listen to their needs, listen to what is holding us back and what are our perspectives. So I hope that governments, not only certain institutions, but government will listen to us.
Fantastic. I hope so too. Thank you. Thank you so much for being here, Claudia. It's just Thank been wonderful to meet you.
Thank you for having me here. And yeah.
So I know you've got to go now. So yeah, feel free to duck off whenever you need to. Yeah, thank you.
Bye. Thanks once again.
So Joanna, your what you hope for the future and where you see permaculture emerging in your world?
Yeah, Claudia named it, and this is not my idea of the part-time gardener. It's just what is, for example, in South America, where in certain regions and countries where people, you know, they always remain farmers. Maybe they move to another job for a time being, but they know they always can lean back and come back, and they can support some kind of food growing, life growing activity. For me, I think the main dream will be more fundamentally about redefinition of growth and redirecting of our idea of growth towards completely other set of values that are aimed at material and material as ecological well-being, like materiality interpreted through ecological lens in almost all cases, with impacts, implications, needs of all elements of ecosystem. And another one will be to redirect our sense of what we strive for or what we want towards a higher non-material goals, which is, you know, a pleasure out of mutual connection, a sense of being able to be relaxed and rested and spend time with family and friends and not work our lives away for money, which we have to pay for electricity, for everything that we spend so much, because we are in this unidirectional system that's pretends that it does not have an end terminus, which is capitalism, as far as I see, in this current hyperinflated version, because capitalist as an being industrial or entrepreneurial is not good. It's our nature to want to innovate and bring things into optimal working condition. So I think these things are critical. And I would say that in the future of permaculture reality, that this permaculture really shapes educational systems, it enters healthcare sensitivities, it defines profiling of next political candidates together with psychotherapy. I would say that I'd like to see three main capitals becoming really societal capitals, which is soil, which is knowledge, and seeds, because through seeds we can connect to all the diversity that we are losing, and without soil we cannot grow anything, and without knowledge, appropriate knowledge, and free open source knowledge in the commons, we are going to stay dependent, or we'll lose channels of transmitting or spaces where knowledge can be shared, because actually you cannot learn farming or gardening from books alone. It takes several seasons of like figuring out, getting surprised, and adjusting your body to physical skilled physical work with plants or with the soil. So these three capitals, I think, seed, soil, and knowledge, or society, you could say society. Satish Kumar says,
Seed, Soul, Society. Yeah.
Soil, Soul, and Society. Yeah. I recently watched it, and I think it's spot on that there is this also Al Gore or Gary Snyder were pointing to, the you know, the pioneers of this ecological transition that we have to make in ourselves as much as in the systems, is I forgot right now what I wanted to say, but yes, it's the spiritual, it's actually the spiritual aspect, this kind of a quieting down of our human being, so that we actually can feel the nature on the outside being continuous with us. Right now, this, I will finish here, but we need to address this separation that enables us to treat the outside of us as mere objective material, you know, stage for our infinite mindless innovations. We need to really take a Zen master said, "Whole earth is my entire body." If we start treating earth as the extension of our body,
who said that? Did you say
Master Dogen? He was a Zen master.
I love that.
Whole earth is the earth is my, not even whole body, but entire body. It's break these boundaries. It takes some time.
And so I think, you know, like what you've just been describing there is really that, like, that is kind of the bigger picture or the higher purpose or what it is that is the sense of where we're moving towards. And in a way, really, things like permaculture and agroecology are kind of pathways or ways of seeing and ways of being that can actually help us to move in that direction and help to do that reconnection work, because we have had that separation and it's kind of really the bringing together lots of different things that can help us to find our way back home.
Yeah, yes. And I have been so inspired recently, surprisingly, by the case of Bhutan, which has, instead of having the gross domestic productivity product GDP measure, they use the gross national happiness, and they have defined it in 9 different elements. And Julia Kim, if anyone is interested to check it out, the Center for Center for Well-being of Bhutan, or Center for Happiness of Bhutan. I mean, this is really amazing, because the policy is designed in this country in the way that whatever next decision is being made, it needs to measure the impact, the 9 areas of impact on environment, on individual well-being, on well-being in different groups of age groups. For example, they do not have normal tourism, they have mainly ecotourism. 60% of land in Bhutan is preserved as forest and will not be touched. I mean,
it's so different.
I agree. So this is just to finish with a very inspiring example. I don't know how far they have been engaging or using permaculture, but I think it will be completely congruent with...
I think maybe that's... You've inspired me to... there's someone who I came across who is involved in that work deeply, who's part of the Eco Village Network, an ambassador of the Eco Villages, and I'm also part of that network. So you've inspired me to go and seek out to have conversations around that too. Thank you for reminding me. That's wonderful. Well, thank you so much for joining me today, Joanna. It's been an absolute delight hearing about your work and really innovative ways of sharing permaculture, and just to hear your perspectives on that. And you know, I think something that really grabbed me went right early on in the conversation was when you talked about being Indigenous in your land, and that you have that deep sense of connectivity where you are. I mean, as a recent arrival in Australia, that you know, I don't have that connection. I mean, I'm cultivating that connection here, but it's not that ancient connection with this land. There is an ancient connection. I'm learning as much as I possibly can, but it's there's a difference. And so that's, I found that fascinating too, that, and to know that that connection is so close and so tangible. And it just, I feel really hopeful that through agroecology and through permaculture, and that there's a way of that connection being made, and the knowledge, the deep knowledge of place not being lost. And that's just, you know, the language, culture, place, the deep, the rich and deep connection that happens when you have that kind of knowledge passed on is just amazing. So, well, thank you again. Thank you so much. And I look forward to staying in touch and hearing more about your exhibition and joining in on that. And we will be putting, for people who are listening, we're going to put all the links below to all the different projects and work and how to get in touch with Joanna and her programs and projects, and that will all be down below. So if anyone wants to follow up more about this work, I'm sure you'd be very happy for people to get in touch or to go and visit your websites and things like that.
Thank you, Morag, and thank you for this connection to Australia at this point and for asking us questions that help to reflect and reflect more broadly. This is very, very inspiring, and we also wish you, you know, good vital work and clarity in your vision. So thanks and good luck.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
So that's all for today. Thanks so much for joining me. If you like a copy of my top 10 books to read, click the link below, pop in your email, and I'll send it straight to you. You can also watch this interview over on my YouTube channel. I'll put the link below as well. And don't forget to subscribe, leave a comment, and if you've enjoyed it, please consider giving me a star rating. Believe it or not, the more people do this, the more podcast bots will discover this little podcast. So thanks again, and I'll see you again next week.